Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is B'choros Daf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top line of Daf Tes Zayin with a quote from the Tanaic source that appeared at the end of our previous shiur on Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis. There was a discussion concerning sacrifices that developed a blemish. The source itself covered cases of an animal that was blemished that was dedicated subsequently as a sacrifice, and a case where something was dedicated unblemished and after being dedicated as a sacrifice, as a tomim, unblemished animal, it then developed a blemish. In that context, we are going to refer to the vlodos, the offspring of those animals that were first sanctified and then developed a blemish. And those animals that became pregnant before they were redeemed. As we have mentioned, an animal that becomes blemished cannot be brought as a korban, but rather it is to be redeemed and then treated as a non-korban and is shechted and eaten outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Here we're referring to the offspring that developed before the mother was redeemed. Now, regarding them, Omar Mar is a quote from the source on the previous Omid, Ein Niftin Temimin. You can see that this is in a frame because this is a Tanaic source. This is in effect a quote from that source, and it says that those vlodos cannot be redeemed without themselves developing a blemish. Just by way of introduction to that point, animals that have kedushas haguf, animals that have inherent sanctity, cannot be redeemed unless they are blemished. So we are saying regarding these offspring, they cannot be redeemed unblemished. V'ein matpisan l'chol zevach shiyirtze. And likewise, you cannot impose upon them a korban status of just any korban. The inference would be that you could impose upon them the korban status that the mother had enjoyed. Before going on in the Gemara, it's important for us to point out that the task of this section of Gemara is going to, in effect, be to attempt a question or an attack on Rav Huna's position. Now, Rav Huna's position was mentioned in our previous shiur in the upper half of Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis. So before we go further in the Gemara, let us glance at the side under our Nosei heading, Nosei being the title of the Sugya, in our Shas Ozer, the Gemara that appears on your screen, the marked Gemara, which serves as the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system. We have written as follows. Lahazbir, the job of this Gemara is to explain, Ha di Omar Rav Huna Li'el, Koinson Lavlodos Lekipo. Rav Huna said that the offspring of these Psulei Hamukdashim, there is nothing you can do with them other than put them into a room, and as we mentioned, they put them in a room and they are left to starve to die. So we have to explain Shitas Rav Huna that said, Koinsin l'kipo l'or diyukim min ha-mishnah, in light of inferences that we are going to draw from this Tanaic source, de mashma sheyesh lohem takona. It's mashma that they do have a solution. So the Gemara now goes on, after having cited this quote from the source, we read as follows, Tamimim hu delo mifriki, unblemished, you cannot redeem them. Ha bali mumin mifriki. However, if they develop a blemish, then they can be redeemed. We're referring to those offspring that were conceived before the redemption of their mothers and born after their mother's redemption. L'chol zevach shiyirtzehu de'ein matpison. The source had said that you can't impose upon them a sacrificial status of just any variety. Ha lo'osoi zevach matpison. But the status that their mother had had, you can impose on those offspring. Hefi mishkachas lo. So how would that be done? Demat pison lo'osu zevach. You would be able to impose a korban status that their mother happened to have, and v'nifdin b'mumon. And when they, these offspring, develop a blemish, they could then be redeemed. Neimot hevi tufto de Rav Huna. This would seem to stand in opposition to Rav Huna. Rav Huna, in describing these offspring, said that konsan l'kipa, that there is nothing you can do with them other than to let them die. Well, here we have a solution. We would impose upon them the status, the korban status that their mother happened to have, and then wait for a blemish, at which point you would then redeem them. So why does Rav Huna say there's no solution? Omar loch Rav Huna. Rav Huna would respond, Hu hadin dafilu bali mumin ein niftin. Even after they develop a blemish, they cannot be redeemed. And this is in line with the svara that the Gemara mentioned before on Tes Vav Amid Beis, that they don't have enough sanctity or kedusha status to attach, for that kedusha to attach onto the redemption money that is set aside. In other words, something, in order to lend itself to being redeemed, has to have a certain high level of sanctity that would have the strength to grab onto the redemption funds. V'aydi detona reisha niftin tamimim, but since the reisha used the expression, and the reisha described a different scenario, that was the dedication of an already blemished animal that then bore offspring. There it said those offspring can be redeemed blemish free because of their low level sanctity. It's almost as if true sanctity didn't set upon the animals themselves. It was more of a representative sanctity, or kedushas domim. Therefore, the standards we apply to their offspring, those animals dedicated with a prior blemish, they can be redeemed even without developing a blemish. Therefore, Tona Nami Seifa, in the contrast case, the Seifa used a balanced expression, or the negation, using the same structural tone, namely, Ein Niftin Tamimim. Once again, in contrast with the expression niftin tamimim, the Sefer used the expression ein niftin tamimim, but not for the purpose of drawing an inference that they could be redeemed with a blemish. No, they can't be redeemed at all. So, if you'll ask, so why was the term tamimim used in the Sefer on the latter part? The answer is because that was the grammatical balance and contrast to the resha. And likewise, the idi detona resha lechol zevach shiyirtzeh. And since in the resha, which spoke about the kidam mumon lehekdeshon, it said that they can be a kedusha can be imposed upon them of whatever nature you like. Tona nami seifa. The seifa also used the expression lechol zevach shiyirtzeh, where the seifa said you cannot impose upon the vlados just any kedusha. That too was not taught for the purpose of inferring that you can impose the kedusha of its mother. Therefore, after all is said and done, even with the even in light of this source, there is no kasha on Rav Huna, because in order to develop a kasha, you would have had to, in order to develop a challenge to Rav Huna, you would have had to learn the source with inferences. You would have had to learn the seifa with an inference approach. To that we say it is not to be learned thusly. V'hashochton b'chutz poter. This is a reference to the seifa, the latter part of the source found at the bottom of Tes Vav Amid Beis. This is a reference to those sacrifices that one was makdish, one sanctified them before they developed a mum. Once the mum comes about, the source teaches that if you shecht them outside the Beis HaMikdash, there will be no Avera of Shechitas Chutz. Rav Huna Masni Chayov. Rav Huna learns that case of Shochtan B'chutz as being Chayov, that he is guilty of Shechitas Chutz. Well, you'll ask the following question: how can something be guilty of Shechitas Chutz, which is the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash, when you're dealing with a Baal Mum? And the rule of Shechitas Chutz says only something that could have been brought inside the Beis HaMikdash, when you slaughter it outside, then one's chayav. But this is not something that could have been brought inside the Beis HaMikdash. It is a Baal Mum. So Rav Huna, who has as his version of the Mishnah the word chayav concerning Baal Mum, Umoikim law, and establishes it and explains the Mishnah's Bedukin Sheba'ayin Valiba de Rabbi Akiva. There's a very, very minor type of blemish. It's called Dukin Sheba'ayin. It's a type of imperfection that affects the eye of the animal. That imperfection known as Dukin Sheba'ayin, according to Rabbi Akiva, if that were to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice, even though lechatchila you should not do it, however, if you did it and brought it up onto the Mizbeach and brought the limbs of that animal on the Mizbeach, Rabbi Akiva will tell you, you do not bring them down, leave them there. So, the case of Dukin Sheba'ayin does have a certain amount of connection to the Mizbeach. It's a post facto type connection. If you brought it up, then you don't take it down. However, that is enough altar-related connection to warrant the penalty of Shechitas Chutz for one who would slaughter this outside the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what the Gemara says here, that Rav Huna, as his version of this source, learns Shochtan B'chutz is Chayov, and he sets it up with as the case of Dukin Sheba'ayin, and the source being taught in accordance with Rabbi Kiva de Omar, Im Olu Lo Yerdu. Rabbi Kiva says that if they were brought up onto the Mizbech, they shall not be brought down. We have a little arrow that indicates to look back at Tezvav Amid Beis in order to find where this quote is going to come from. It says here, Bein lifnei pidyonoi, bein la'achar pidyonoi, oise tmura. Regarding these kochim, these sacrifices that were sanctified as sacrifices and only later developed a blemish. So the source told us that the tmura status could be generated. Tmura is a situation where one attempts to replicate the sanctity that exists on a particular korban onto a chulin, a common animal. It's not to be confused with a transferal of Kedusha, but rather a replication of Kedusha. So the source tells us that this act, even though, by the way, it's forbidden to do it, the issue is, does it take hold? You know, even if one does it. So it will take hold when you're dealing with these type of kochim shekidam hekdeshem esmuman, whether you did the tmura before the redemption of that animal, of the original sacrifice, or after the redemption. Before going further into the Gemara, we want to glance at the nosei, the topic heading that appears in the outside margin, where we have written Shitas Rav Nachman, Tmuras Psulei Hamukdoshim, the tmura generated from these Psulei Hamukdoshim, the case of Kidam Hekdeshu Asmumo, Mesa. The tmura animal is to die. Hagemara Sheol is Loma Mesa. Why should it be set to die? Te Ochel Ketmuras Bechoru Meiser Shine Cholin Bemuman. If one were to take a firstborn male animal, which is a Bechor, and it has a korban status to it, or a Meiser animal. Meiser is the tithe of one tenth of one's animals born that year. It's called Meiser Behema. It too is brought as a sacrifice. If one, before sacrificing a Bechor Meiser, made Tmura from them, tried to replicate the Kedusha, so the halacha regarding those Tmura animals is that they are set aside till they develop a blemish and they are eaten. It might just be pointed out parenthetically that a standard case of Tmura, that replica animal is brought as an actual sacrifice. Namely, it's brought onto the Mizbeach as you process a regular sacrifice. However, what appears in our Gemara is Rav Nachman says that one who makes Tmura from these Psulei Hamukdoshim, Rav Nachman will tell us, well, those die. The Gemara asks, why should they die? At least treat them like Tmuras Bechor or Tmuras Meiser, which is it doesn't die, it's set aside till it blemishes and then is eaten. Now, the Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Baravua. Utmurasoi la'achar pidyoinoi mesa. The tmura done after you redeem the original animal, the psulei hamukdashim, if you then generate a tmura, that tmura is to die. My taimo. Why is that its destiny? Hechi levi. Well, what should you do? Likrave, to offer it as a sacrifice, that can't be done. Mikoch kedusha dechuyo ka'asya. It came as a result of a rejected kedusha, rejected sanctity. What we mean by rejected sanctity, it means it comes from an animal that already experienced pidyon. Pidyon disconnects the animal from true holy status. So now you replicated that non-complete holy status onto another animal, so of course it cannot be offered as a sacrifice. What else? Lifrika, redeem the tmura animal. Loi alima limitpas pidyoina. Alima has to do with the word strength. It doesn't have the strength to whatever minor sanctity level it might have, doesn't have the strength to grab on to the redemption money that's set aside. Hilkoch Mesa, therefore, it is set aside to die. Now, the question that we mentioned in our introductory remarks. You'll see that it lasts a few lines. The amount of Gemara to develop the question is around 6 lines, and that's indicated by the long question marking you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, an encircled kuf with a descending vertical dashed line. Maskif lo Rav Amram. V'tis'achiyu b'mumo l'baylim. Why not have it eaten with a mum that's developed, a blemish that develops? Let the owner eat it after it develops a mum. Once again, we're referring to the tmura that was generated after the pidyon of the psule hamukdashim. Let it be eaten with a mum. V'chima bein zu l'tmuras b'chor ha'maiser. Why should this be treated any differently than the case of tmura replication done from a b'chor or maiser, which are animals that are not redeemed, a b'chor and maiser animals that you cannot redeem, and yet the tmura is eaten with a mum? Disnan, the source says, Tmuras b'choro meiser hein uvladon uvlad vladon adsoif kol ha'olam. The tmura done from an animal that was a b'choro meiser, so the tmura or any of its offspring that down through all of its subsequent generations, Harei hein ki b'chor meiser, they are like b'chor and meiser, v'yochlu b'mumon l'baylim. Just like a b'chor and meiser, if they develop a mum, are eaten by their owners, so too the tmura of the b'chor meiser. Omar le Abaye. Abaye answers, zeh shem imoy olov, zeh shem imoy olov. Imo is a reference to the original animal, the animal from which the replication started. Ze shem imo olav. So we're going to introduce each one of these. Tmuras b'choro meiser mikri. The tmura of a b'chor or meiser is called tmuras b'chor. And ma b'chor u'meiser b'mumon misaklim l'baylim. Just like an original b'chor meiser, when they develop a mum, are eaten by the owner, af tumurasan misaklo, so to the replica animal will be eaten. Vezeh shem imo olov tumuras kochim mikri. The case that we were dealing, that Rav Nachman was speaking about, is called tumuras kochim. Ma kochim lo misakli elo bepidyon. Just like kochim, the original sacrifice that developed a mum, cannot be eaten unless it is redeemed, which, by the way, is not the case with b'chor and meiser. They don't lend themselves to redemption. These need to be redeemed. Af tmurasan nami lo misachli elo bepidyon. So too, the tmura could not be eaten unless there would be redemption. However, there's a catch. V'holo alima lemitpas pidyona, but they don't have the strength to be redeemed. Hence, they are not to be eaten. And hence, Rav Nachman said that they are to die. Tanyo kavosi de Rav Nachman, we have a Tanaic source supporting Rav Nachman, namely that the tmura after the pidyon is to die. The tmura done from the original psul mukdashim that was redeemed, it is to die. Minayin l'tmuras psulei hamukdashim shemesa, and this is a Tanaic source saying, just like Rav Nachman, from where do we know that tmuras psul mukdashim is to die? Talmud loymar, the pasuk says, mimale hagera tomei hu lochem. This, by the way, is in Vayikra, Perik Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalet. On the side of the Gemara, we have included this Pasuk, and let's just read the Pasuk as it appears to get a sense of the content of the Pasuk. It says, Ach es ze lo sochlu mimale hagero mimafrise haparsa. The Pasuk is found in the context of animals that are considered unkosher variety animals in Parshas Shmini and Sefer Vayikra. So it says, there you shall not eat of those animals, even though they are cud chewers, umimafrise aparsa, or they may have split hooves, es hagomol, do not eat the gomol kimala gerohu, and it is a cud shur, but you still cannot eat it, uparsa einenu mafris, tomehu lochem. It happens to lack a split hoof, and therefore tomehu lochem is forbidden to you. So in this pasuk we see mima'ale hagera, and it said at the end tomehu lochem. So this source shows Rav Nachman's, reflects Rav Nachman's din. Hence there is support from this Tanaic source for Rav Nachman's teaching. The Gemara asks, but isn't this phrase of mima'ale hagera, isn't this homi boyale lechomesh chatos mesos? Chomesh chatos mesos is a reference to a list of five types or five situations of a sin offering that if they come about, they must die. Without getting into the actual items in that list, we'll just refer to it as the list of Chamesh Chatos Mesos. So isn't this pasuk needed for that? The Gemara answers, Hahu mi mafrise haparso tome nafka. That's learned from the other phrase in that pasuk. So we have a second phrase to cover the Chamesh Chatos Mesos. Hence, male hagera can be used for our purpose. Tanyo nami hochi. And we have a source supporting this answer. Minayin l'chomesh chatos mesos. From where do we know of the five sin offerings that must be set aside to die and not brought as a sacrifice? Tamad lomar mi mafrise haparso tomei. Now the Gemara asks, how can you say that Chomesh Chatos are learned from a posuk, from a verse? Chomesh Chatos meses hilchaso gemiri law. That is a function of an oral tradition, not a scriptural reference, not a reference in a posuk. Ela, ki also kro l'tmuras osham. So the Gemara makes an attempt here and says, the posuk's role is to tell me about how you treat the tmura, a replication done of an osham sacrifice. The Gemara asks, Tumuras osham nami hilchasahi. The rules governing Tumuras osham are also learned from or based on an oral tradition, which says, Kol shebechatos mesa beosham roya. Any case that in the situation of a chatos, it would be sentenced to dying, the equivalent of that with an osham is sent out to graze till it develops a blemish and is then redeemed. And the money is used to buy a korban. So the rules governing tumuras osham are not based on these psukim. Elo, li oilam chomesh chatois mesois. We go back to what we said originally, that the posuk of Mafrise Parsa Tomei is in fact relevant to the topic of Chomesh Chatos Mesos, the Itzdrich Kro, the Itzdrich Hilchasa. I need both a posuk and I need an oral tradition. Di Mikro, had I had just a posuk. Hava Amino, Laraya. I would have thought that if you do a Tmuras Chatos, and it says that it's forbidden, I would have thought it means that it's forbidden to the extent that you don't bring it as a korban, but any one of those chomesh chatos hamesis, any one of those five examples which we did not enumerate, but I would have thought that they are set out to graze till they develop a mum, and then you redeem it. Komash malon hilchisa. Therefore the oral tradition comes and tells me lamisa, that they are to die. Had I just had an oral tradition, have amino, I would have thought hecho de ovad ikri veochal mehani chomesh chatos isura iko lav leka. I would have thought that though he's not supposed to bring them, if he was violated the halacha and did bring them, so then he would be in violation of a of a commandment. That's isura ika, in violation. He would be in violation, but lav leka, lav is an actual negative command. He wouldn't be in violation of an actual negative command. So therefore, komash malon de ika lav. Therefore, with the pasuk, I see that there is an actual negative command associated with this. The lav being lo soichlu mimale hagera v'iboyasema. This is another approach to the psukim that we just made reference to. La'akushi dover habo mimale gera l'dover habo mimafrise haparsa. To make a connection or a comparison between these two categories, something that comes from Male Gera, animals that are from that category, with those that are from the Mafrise Parso. Mala Halon Bemiso, just like over there, they are to die, so too Afkan Bemiso. Now, in order to elaborate on that answer, that Iboy Sema, we glance at Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Iboy Sema Lohochi also mi Mafrise Parso, de Mishtoi Bechatos Hamesos. I need Mafrisa Parsa, which speaks about the five Hatos that die. I need it, Lahakish, to compare Dover Habo Mi Male Hagera, namely Tmuras Psule Hamugdoshim Lachar Pidyonon. I need, as we said, I need Mafrisa Parsa in order to compare the issue of that, or, of Tmuras Psule Hamugdoshim, which is derived from Male Hagera, the nafko mimale agero, the dover habo mimafrisa parsa chatos amesos, whereby we compare the halacha of the tmuras chatos to the tmuras psua mukdashim to the case of the chatos amesos. And just like by the chatos amesos, as we know, they are to die, so too the tmuras psule hamukdashim are likewise to die. The Mishnah. Before learning the Mishnah, we glance at the topic heading in the outside margin, Hamakabel Tzoin Barzel Mino Akum. This is an arrangement where someone receives or accepts from a Gentile an animal with the intent of raising the animal, increasing its size, its volume, and seeing to it that it produces offspring. And as time passes with this increased value and offspring production, the original owner will split that with the person developing it. However, in the arrangement of tzon barzel, barzel means iron being a very strong, non-changing material. The idea of tzon barzel, tzon are sheep or goats, it's a reference to, though, all animals. Tzon barzel is a case where the animal is evaluated at the time it is given to over to be developed, and we'll call that its principal value. Its original value is established through this evaluation, and the original owner, in this case the Gentile, is guaranteed to receive that value plus the profits we just described. So the Mishnah will mention its own barzel arrangement. What is the halacha with regard to the offspring in the context of Bechorah? We mentioned that the Jew and the Gentile will split the offspring. So the Jew will get 50% of the vlados. Those vlados, when they produce their own offspring. There will be a Bechor, there may be a Bechor, a first male child born from them. What will the status of those Vlados and their Bechor be with regard to the Halacha of Bechora? That's what we've written. Ma dino uvlodoisov bechora. So our Mishnah says, Hamakabel tzon barzel min oivei kechovim. One who enters a tzon barzel arrangement with a Gentile. Vlodoisehen pturin. The offspring of that tzon barzel, when those offspring grow and eventually give birth to their own firstborn, they in effect would be, by the way, a third generation from the original animal. When we say Vlodosem Pturin, we're saying that the third generation, which is in effect the Bechor that's born from the Vlodos, will be exempt. They will not need to be given to a Kohen. They're exempt from Bechorah. They are not classified as Bechorah. Vladei Vladosehen Chayovim. However, the next generation of those, when they develop a Bechor, that's the Bechor of the Vladei Vlados, that will be Chayov in Bechorah. We have a little chart on the side of the Gemara to help keep track of the different generations, if you will, that the Mishnah just referenced. So you can see that there's an original behema, we call it Barzel. That's the animal that was originally owned by the Goy. It then produces Vlados, and those Vlados, we said, are shared. Now, the Vlados will include the Abachor, and Vlodei Vlados. And you can see on the chart that appears as a third generation from the original animal. So the Tanakhama says that as far as the mitzvah of Bechora is concerned, that will only start with regard to the Bechor born from the Vlodei Vlados. So if the Vlodei Vlados themselves are the third generation, the Bechor born from them is a fourth generation. So that will be Chayev. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer, Afilu al Asora Doros Pturin. Even after 10 generations, all of these Vlodois are exempt from Bechora. She'achriyuson la'oivei kichovim. Because they serve as a guarantee to the Gentile. Let's not forget, the Gentile expects to receive a cash payment of the original value that the original animal had been evaluated as. So if, let us say, the Goy doesn't get that amount paid back, that we call if he doesn't get his principal back, well, he'll seize any of these future generations. This is what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel reflects, and we're going to see more about this later in the Gemara. Now the Mishnah introduces a new point. Rochel Shiolda Min Eiz, a sheep that bore an offspring that resembled a goat. The Eiz Shiolda Min Rochel Ptura Min HaBechora is exempt from the mitzvah of Bechora. V'im Yesh Bo Mitzah Simonim Chayov. If it has some signs of similarity to its mother, so it will be Chayov in Bechora. The Gemara, the Maimra. Are we to suggest, are we to understand the Kevon de lo nokat mora zuzi, that since the owner, the goy in this case, the original owner, doesn't take money, doesn't get the money, he's Goy, don't forget, he gave over the animal to be raised and developed. He didn't receive money for that animal. And yet we say that the offspring of that animal will be exempt from Bechora. So it sounds to us that since the Goy didn't receive payment, Birshusa Demora Kaima, that the animal is considered in the domain of the original owner. The original owner, in this case, a Gentile. And as a result of that, there is Bechor exemption. So we want to try to develop a rule from here that where someone gives over Tzon Barzel to someone else to develop, the animal is considered in the domain of the original individual. Now, this analysis has bearing not only on mitzvahs Bechora. As we just said, since it's considered according to approach of the Gemara, since it's exempt from Bechora, it seems to indicate that it's considered still a Gentile owned animal in the domain of the original owner. This also has ramifications to the realm of ribis. Ribis has to do with interest, increased payback for a loan received. The Gemara, Viraminu. We now raise a contradiction to the analysis that our Mishnah seems to suggest. We have another source, and it says, Ein mekablin soing barzel miYisrael mipnei shu ribis. A Jew is not allowed to pay back loans with interest. And as a result of that halacha, the halacha of ribis, it says in the Mishnah, in Bava Metzia, that one cannot enter into a tzon barz arrangement, because what in effect happens is that using names for our illustration, Reuven gives to Shimon an animal. Shimon is then expected to raise and develop this animal. But he at the same time guarantees the original principal value of that animal to be paid back to Reuven. They will split in the subsequent profits and increased value and offspring. So you can say that Shimon received a loan of that original animal and guarantees a principal repayment, and in exchange for that he is willing to work on the animal, develop it, increase its value, and share in the offspring. So as a result of Shimon returning to Reuven more than he received, the Mishnah reveals that this is forbidden because of ribis, the prohibition of paying interest. Alma, but this shows us birshuso de mekabel kaimo, that the tzon barzel, the original animal, is considered in the domain or under the control of the receiver, of the developer, because if it were considered in the domain of the original owner, so then the increase value and vlados are taking place in his own domain. As Rashi says, "De'i birshus mora kaimi amai ribisu." Why would it be considered ribis? Birshusu demore ashbach vlados. It's in the domain of the original owner that there is this increase as a result of the increased value as a result of the offspring. So, from the fact that it's classified as ribis, it would indicate to us that the animal is viewed as if it were alone, given over to the reshus, to the domain of the receiver. So this presents to us a contradiction. On the one hand, our Mishnah, which exempts the Tzon Barzel from Bechorah, shows us that the Tzon Barzel is viewed as maintaining or remaining in the domain of the original owner, the Gentile in that case. And on the other hand, the halacha of Ribbis by the same Tzon Barzel arrangement would show us that it's in the domain of the receiver. So, to answer this, we have a couple of approaches. Number one, Omar Abaye, lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Ha de kobil olei oinsa vezula, ha de lo kobil olei oinsa vezula. In the Mishnah, where it seemed to say that Tzon Barzel remains in the domain of the original owner, that's because the original owner accepted upon himself any losses in the event of oinus, something of an unanticipated, uncontrolled nature, or zula, or market value drop. As a result of that, of his accepting upon himself a certain amount of loss responsibility, it's said to have not ever departed his domain. Hence, it's considered in the Gentile's domain, and therefore an exemption from Bechorah. Veha, the ribis source, the lo kobolole, oinsa vezula, the original owner, didn't accept upon himself any loss obligations. He was guaranteed a full, unconditional repayment of principal value. So in such a case, he doesn't accept upon himself any connection to it, any responsibility. Therefore, once it's transferred in a Tzon Barzel arrangement to the receiver, it's considered completely under the receiver's domain or control, and therefore it's viewed as a regular loan, and hence the ribis prohibition arises. As far as Abaye's resolution, this gives way to a long question. You can see the kufits encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with a descending vertical dashed line indicates the length of this question. Oma le Rava. Number one, the kobil ole oinsa vezula tzon barzel koris le. A case where the original owner accepts upon himself some loss aspect, loss as a result of oinus or zoil market drop in value. Why would you term that tzon barzel? The whole point of tzon barzel, as we said, is a guaranteed return of the principal value. But if you have the owner accepting upon himself oinsa vezula, so there's no guarantee of principal value. So how can you? Why would you term it? Why would our Mishnah use the term tzon barzel in such a case? The ode, a second question, my Pascha. Rashi, in explaining this question, he says, Bitmiha klomar Pascha the milse. You made some type of clear statement, the yesh chiluk bein tzon barzel utzon barzel. That from where do you know to make such a distinction? The oid, and furthermore, if you say such a distinction exists, so aditoni seifa, instead of teaching in the seifa of the ribis source, the source dealing with the interest prohibition, where it says avol mekablin tzon barzel min ha'oved kechavim, you are allowed to receive or enter into a tzon barzel arrangement with an idol worshiper, because when you're dealing with an idol worshiper, so there is no ribis prohibition. Well, instead of going out of the realm of Yisrael, lifloig v'lisni b'dida, why not make the distinction between usur and mutter within the realm of Yisrael as follows? Mamed var mamurim, when would tzon barzel be usur? The lo kobil ole oinsa vezula, where the original owner accepts no loss responsibility. And as we said before, according to Abaya's analysis, it would then be completely in the domain of the receiver, and that's why there is a problem of interest. But if the no-sane, the original owner, accepts upon himself and this aspect of loss, shapir dummy, then it would be good. There would be no ribis problem. Now, the source itself with regard to ribis doesn't make any distinction when you're dealing with a Yisrael and Son Barzel. The only time there seems to be a heter of ribis is only in the realm of an idol worshipper. Elo Omar Rava. So as a result of the questions raised, Abaye's distinction between the two sources, the Bechorah source and the Ribbis source with regard to Tzon Barzel, we need a new explanation. So this brings us to the number two, and that's why you see to the side of the Gemara a number two, the drawn in. Elo Omar Rava. Idi v'idi delo kobel olei oinza v'zula. The case of Ribbis and the case of Bechora, the original owner does not accept upon himself any loss, not as a result of oinus and not as a result of zola either. Therefore, it's completely in the domain of the receiver. Now, as a result of that, we can easily understand why there is a ribis prohibition. However, in the case of the Bechora, where the original owner was a Gentile, but you're telling me now that the Gentile is out of the picture with regard to loss responsibility. If the Gentile is completely out of the picture, then why is there an exemption of Bechora? V'hocha gabi Bechora hainu taimo. The reason why there is nevertheless, yes, an exemption with regard to the Bechora, the ilu osi oivei kichavim boi zuzi, because if the idol worshipper would come along and request his money, request the value, the original value, velo yohiv lei, and the Yisrael would not give him, doesn't have, let's say, or doesn't give him the cash, tofis lo lebehema, the goy will automatically seize upon the animal, the original animal that he gave over, even though it now has increased in value, but he'll grab that as a type of payment in lieu of the cash that he didn't get. The lo mashkach lo la behema, and if he doesn't find the behema, tofis vlados dida, that Gentile will seize upon its offspring. As far as the Gentile is concerned, the offspring are up for grabs. V'hare yad oyved kechovim be'emtza. And as a result, this is considered a case of the goy, the Gentile, being involved. Literally, his hand is in the middle. It means he's in the middle of things. He's involved with it. And the rule says, based on the psukim, that when a Gentile is involved, there's this, we'll call it this potential involvement, that is enough to result in a Bechor exemption. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, and we feature in this topic heading the following. Machloikis Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda, we'll see a controversy between these two Amoroyim, b'mekabel tzon barzel mino akum, one who enters a tzon barzel arrangement with an idol worshipper, ha'im p'tur b'chora koleil gam Vlad Havlodois Shel Habehema Horishona. Here we might want to make use of our chart that we provided on the upper margin of the Gemara. The question is, in a standard Tzon Barzel arrangement, does the Bechora exemption extend to the Vlade Vlodois? That would mean that if the Vlode Vlodos produce a Bechor, we can, using generations, we could say the third generation from the original Tzon Barzel has a firstborn. Will there be an exemption? Will that Bechor be exempt? So Rav Yehuda says Kolel. Rav Yehuda says that Vlados are included in the Ptur, in the exemption. Rav Huna says Lo Kolel. It won't be included in the exemption. Let us also take note of the markings that appear, the geometric forms that follow. We will see after reporting or presenting the positions of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, there will be triangles. They are explained under our Mivneh heading, with the point facing up there, Kushos al Rav Yehuda. And with the point facing down there, Kushos al Rav Huna. So now we read the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna. Vlados Pturin. In the case of Mekabel Tzon Barzel, so the offspring, that would be the first generation after the original animal, that's, we call that number two, that's the number two generation after, as far as after the original. So the Vlados are Potter, that means a Bechor born from them will be exempt, won't need to be given to a Kohen. Vladei Vladosehen Chayovin. However, the generation after that will be obligated in Bechorah. That would mean the Bechor born from the Vladei Vlados will be obligated in Bechorah, and it has to be given to a Kohen. Rav Yehuda Omar, Vladei Vlados Nami Pturin. In the case of Mekabel Tzon Barzel Mino Akum, Vladei Vlados are also exempt. Vladei Vlados Chayovin. However, the generation after that, that's the fourth generation from the original animal, their offspring, or their Bechor, will be Chayov. So the difference between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda is how many generations after the original owner will be included in the Bechorah exemption. Tanan. We present a Tanaic source which will pose a challenge to Rav Yehuda. Our Mishnah teaches, Hemid Vlodois Tachasi Moisehen Vlodei Vlodos Pturin. Now, what's the case of Hamid Vlodosein Tachasi Moisehen? That is a case, Rashi explains on the Mishnah. We ought to take a look at that. Four lines into the narrow lines of Rashi, or the, let's say the third narrow line of Rashi. Hamid Vlodosein Tachasi Moisehen. Rashi on the Mishnah says, Sheposach lo pesach lo oive kichovim, the Jew who accepted the task of raising the original animal gives an opening to the Gentile and says, listen, Lios lo koach bevlados v'omalo, he grants a certain strength to the original owner vis-a-vis the vlados, and says v'omalo im yomusu habehemos, if the original animal dies, tito havlados hamagios lechelki, then take the offspring that I get as my share, take them in lieu of payment. V'yu tachas yodai ba'oysen domim ad oysazman atzmoi. So you will then be able to view as your collateral, if you will, the vlados until I come up with the cash for the original payment. That is the payment of the original value of the animal that he received. So that's the case of Hamid. So the source, we'll read that again now in the Gemara, Tanan, Hamid Vlodois Tachasi Moisehen. The Jew told the Gentile that if anything happens to the original animal, I don't pay you with cash, take the vlados that I would receive as my portion. So in such a case, vlode vlodos pturin. Then we say that the third generation will be exempt from bechorah, namely the bechor which would be part of the fourth generation does not need to be given to the kohen. So how do we impose, or how do we arrive at an exemption regarding the vlode vlodos? Taimo dehamid. From our mission, it would seem to be only because the Jew made this offer to the Gentile. Haloi hamid lo. However, if there was no offering of this arrangement made to the Gentile, so there would be no p'tur of vlode vlados. In other words, if you were left with the original Tzon Barzel arrangement, there would be no vlode vlados exemption. T'yufto l'Rav Yehuda. This would seem to be a repudiation of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said that in an original standard Tzon Barzel arrangement, the vlode vlados in fact are exempt. Omar Loch Rav Yehuda explains, Hu Hadin Afagav the Lo Hamid. This exemption regarding the Vlode Vlodos will be in power even without the Hamid arrangement. The Ha Komash Malon, the point of the Mishnah, is to tell us as follows. Afilu Hamid Nami. Even in the case of Hamid, where the Jew made an offer to the Goy, listen, instead of, if anything happens to the mother animal, you can seize upon the vlados. Even in that case where he makes the offer, the urche de oved kechavim lemitvas bina, we know that it's the way of the goy to seize upon the offspring. Vahave kami delo hamid. Rashi explains, he deals with this Gemara uses the word klomar, which indicates not necessarily to translate the words literally, but in the case of Hamid, I would have thought that the Goy would be allowed, or he would view himself as have rights, let's say, to all future generations. And the Havamina would be, without this Mishnah, that all generations would be exempt from Bechorah. So I need to be taught Vlode Vlodos Pturin, Vlode Vlode Vlodos Chayovin. Namely, that even in the case of Hamid, there is a limitation to how many generations of exemption will be. Namely, that Vlode Vlodos will be exempt. Vlode Vlodos will be Chayav. But we're not saying, it says Rav Yehuda, that we are to learn the Mishnah in making a distinction between these two cases of Hamid versus Lo Hamid, but rather, even in the case of Lo Hamid, there will be a Vlode Vlodos exemption. And just to repeat the point, but even in the case of Hamid, the exemption will not continue to Vlode Vlode Vlodos. And when we make references to these different subsequent generations, we recommend using the chart that we included above. Tanan, we see an inverted triangle. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Afilu ad Asora Doirois Pturin Shachriyuson Le'oved Kechavim. Rab Shimon ben Gamliel says that even 10 generations are exempt. Bishlamo L'Rav Yehuda. This Mishnah will make sense according to Rav Yehuda. D'yomar Nochis Tanakamo L'Dori. That he mentions that the Tanakamo makes reference to exemptions including subsequent generations. As Rashi says, Lemifter, the Tanakam was pot lemifter dori shte doros litzon barzel poter Tanakama. The Tanakama made mention of an original two generational exemption. In other words, the Vlados and the Vlode Vlados, according to Rabbi Yehuda, were exempt. So he got into generations. So I, as a result of that, Hainu Domar Le Rav Shlomo Amliel Afilata Sorodoros Turin. I understand Rav Shlomo Amliel says that even up to 10 generations there will be exemption. Elol Rav Huna the Omar Lo Nochis Tanakama Ladori. But according to Rav Huna, who said that Tanakama did not get involved with multiple generations, he just said that the once Mekabel Tzon Barzel, so Vlodos are Pturin, but didn't mention Vlodos and Vlode Vlodos as well. So my Afilu Ad Asoro Doros, what is the purpose of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel phrasing, presenting himself as saying even 10 generations? Omar Loch Rav Huna, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Ahem Idkoi. Rav Huna will tell you that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is not referring to the original Tzon Barzel arrangement, but is referring to the Hamid case, where in the Hamid case, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, there the Tanakama did make reference to an addition, the Mishnah did make reference to an additional generation, and as a result of that, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is saying that in the case of Hamid, so you are saying it includes only one extra generation, namely Vlode Vlodos. I say it will include all future generations. Reading that line again, Omar Lach Rav Huna, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Ahemid Koi, De Nochis Ladori. Toshma, Hamakabil Tzon Barzel Menoivik Kichovim, Vlodois Pturin, Vlode Vlodois Chayovin. This is a Tanaic source which seems to say black on white that in the case of Mekabel Tzon Barzel, the Vlode Vlodos are obligated. Tiufta the Rav Yehuda. This would repudiate Rav Yehuda. Omar Loch Rav Yehuda, Emo, Hein Uvlodois Sehen. Namely, the Vlodos and the Vlode Vlodos are exempt. Iko di Amri. Another loshon, another version to this is Hein Uvlodosein Pturin, that the source is telling me that they and the Vlodos are exempt. Hein, we have to emphasize, we didn't emphasize this before, but Hein means the Vlodos, and the Vlode Vlodos are exempt. So if you learn it that way, then Tiufto de Rav Huna, this would repudiate Rav Huna, who said only the Vlodos are exempt. Omar Loch Rav Huna, Emo, Hein, Uvlodos Potter, Uvlode Vlodos Chayov. Hein Uvlodos means the Vlodos themselves. Hein Uvlodos is in reference, maybe it's like a double expression, but emphasis on the Vlodos themselves. Only the Vlodos are exempt. The Vlode Vlodos are chayav, just like Rav Huna said. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.